Welcome, everyone, to tonight's Bible class. I'm really looking forward to, Russell's continuation of his class. Welcome to those who might be listening. Welcome to our visitors. So, Proverbs 25 tonight. So we'll read the first 14 verses inclusive. And once we've read those 14 verses, then Russell will come up with his presentation.
There's a few here tonight that weren't here last fortnight as well. So don't worry, we didn't cover too much really last time. We'll be able to run through that hopefully quite quickly to get you up to speed with what we want to do tonight. Which is really the same thing, but we're just going to attack it from a slightly different angle. So keep your finger in the pile. So last time, did I turn that on? I'm on now. last time, draw a picture a little bit of a proverb as a tool wanting to be used. Proverbs are spiritual tools. We all know that tools are good at the job they're intended to do, and are progressively less good at doing jobs they're not intended to do. And this is a little bit like the wisdom we need to be able to wield a proverb. We need more than one tool in our toolkit. Otherwise, some great home maintenance results can emerge. Not everything is a nail, and we need more than just a hammer in our toolbox. We've got hundreds of proverbs in the book of Proverbs and scattered throughout the Bible. People are quoting proverbs all the time at each other, and sometimes when you're in a Bible that doesn't highlight out the poetry, you can realise that a verse that you've always taken really, really seriously for a long time is actually a proverb being hurled from one person to the next. And we may come across one of those. There are lots and lots of proverbs, but I think just like we could be overwhelmed by going into a tool shop and seeing so many things, if we want to start to learn how to do stuff, it's probably worthwhile mastering a few first. So to build up a toolkit of things that we know how to use and we understand how they work. And so that was an idea. Just as a bit of an example on that one, I haven't got this one down, but you know the proverb that says, even a fool when he closes his mouth is considered wise, right? Now, what if we said, well, actually, that's the epitome of wisdom, right? I'm just going to grab that one proverb. That's going to be my one tool in my toolkit, and I'm just going to be silent. So we might be considered wise, but it doesn't actually meet every situation that we meet. And there are some times where actually to stand silent is to do the wrong thing. So not every tool is a hammer. Not every proverb works all the time in every circumstance. And just as an example, much of tonight we're going to spend in Proverbs 25 to 29, the Hezekiah collection of Proverbs. And just as an example of this, as a counterpoint to the fool holding his lips, have a look in Proverbs 29. And verse 12, talking about a ruler or a king. If a ruler listens to falsehood, all his officials will be wicked. Now, a king gets to listen to falsehoods all the time. People are coming to him with their case and their point. But if a ruler sits and listens to falsehood, doesn't speak up against it, if he tolerates gossip in his circle, if he tolerates wrong things being done, eventually, verse 12, all his officials will be wicked. He won't know who to trust because he's set the example to everybody else that doesn't actually matter what it says, just listen to it and off you go. And in time, he's got no one he can rely on because they have just been got used to listening to falsehood too. So we need a range of tools, and the way I've suggested is that we build it up slowly. So take a proverb, take it for a few swings, see how it works, test it out, try and find what spiritual jobs it's useful for and what spiritual circumstances it's obviously clearly not intended to be applied in. Build up your toolkit so that eventually you've got a good set. And I think there's a precedent for that in these chapters, Proverbs 25 to 29. So that was the one thing. And the other thing was the layers of wisdom that are involved in a proverb. It takes wisdom of various different sorts to be able to end up producing a proverb, as those who will have grabbed hold of the homework task will have found that it's actually not all that easy to put together a proverb. There's wisdom needed to have the insight as to what the issue is, to be able to draw from natural life something to compare or to contrast or to trigger the mind off on. But then it also takes wisdom on the other end to learn how to apply it, when to apply it. And then can I take this proverb and use it for something completely new? Some of the layers of wisdom that are involved in this process of proverbing. So, out of interest, how many of you had a go at starting your own collection of proverbs? Non-guilty hands up. Okay, so most of you chose to write proverbs. That's good. We gave them a choice. So there we are. But it's worthwhile, I think. Grab hold of a few proverbs. Start to try them out. See where they work. See where they don't apply. So the other task we had was to be witnesses of Christ in the story of the Gospels. See if we could come up with some proverbs of our own. And it's quite challenging, I think, anyone that spent the time trying to say, yeah, I know what I want to say. And there were a number of people that came in with their responses that said, here are my drafts. Now, I mean, are you meant to be able to have a draft proverb? You understand a draft essay, but it's like, well, this is only six words anyway. Which you know, but there is that sense that you say, this is not yet polished. It's sort of expressing what I want, but I don't know if this is going to be memorable enough, or I don't know if the imagery is quite being caught. And suddenly you realise when you're reading the book of Proverbs how well-crafted these proverbs are, that it's not just a simple way to write text. It's actually easier to sit down and write out great big long essays that have no balance or rhythm or inspiration in them. You may think that you've passed the years of school assignments, but I'll just put you up an interesting little graph. This is incoming proverbs to my inbox by date. Now, right, today, this is 23, right? It's not yesterday, it's today. And probably lunchtime today is about here. But we do tend to do that, don't we? So it's not just kids. And kids, whenever your parents are saying, look, you've got an assignment due in 3 weeks' time, then just pull that graph up. It's on the internet and can be used to your advantage. Well done, Brother Pitcher, for being the one person who said, I've just got to get this out of the way.
Yeah.
Don't care what I'm going to write. I'm just going to get it in and done. And you need people like that, don't you?
So what you're saying is the quality wasn't so good, though.
No. He came through again.
Yeah, all my fellow
I wasn't going to shame him by such diligence as to contribute twice. There we are. Is there anyone that wants, right at the moment, to share any insights they had as they tried to write Proverbs? So just have a little think about that while I pull up, hopefully.
I found it easier when I wrote it with somebody to bounce it off. Yeah. So you have a go and then you say it. Unfortunately, it was James. I didn't get a great deal of flack.
But I came in and helped out.
Yeah.
But it did make it easier if you had somebody to say, what do you think? Do you get what this is saying? Like,
yeah. Yep. So these are all available and maybe easier to peruse on your phone where you can scan up and down for yourself. I did like this one here. Beware those that delight in asking questions but aren't listening to the answer. I tried to shorten it, and I think it was just beware the question, not looking for an answer. But that's there. It was interesting, there were a couple of... there were a number of people that drew inspiration from the picture of the woman with the issue of blood. And I liked touch in faith silently but confess out loud. It's a good observation from that one. It wasn't hard to pick the collection that had come from a group of people working together.
You can. No, just one. That was definitely just one.
That is so much
better. Such a contrast to mine underneath, just so short.
Yes, yeah. I'll love to see the other side of this filled in with the gospel references to which they... So, that's good. You know you've got some real talent in your midst, and I'll keep that up there. And if anyone has any burning proverbs that they want to add to the list, then my email box is still open, and I'll leave it there. But writing proverbs isn't easy, as you can see. You can, in some of these, you can see what the writer is trying to do. And you think, oh, yeah, it's almost there, but how can it tweak? But I think for those who did the put their mind to it, it's been a well worthwhile thing just to help appreciate the qualities of a proverb. So we're going to go back to the idea of building your own collection, and just for the... Just for the benefit of those that weren't here last time, the book of Proverbs is divided up into smaller collections, as you can see up on the screen. So it's not all just a continuous smorgasbord all through the book. There are sections and... Different parts have different purposes and different rhythms and structure. So the chapters 1 to 9 really are a whole series of discourses. They're not proverbs in that same one or two verse comparison contrast sense. They are chapters that should be read probably all as a sitting, or at least a discourse at a time. Then chapters 10 to 22, verse 16, the Proverbs of Solomon, the classic Proverbs. Very few of those are more than a verse or two long. And there doesn't seem to be a lot of, because this has been in this verse, then therefore this verse next to it connects strongly or that sort of thing. They do seem to be more just one-offs. Two small sections called the Words of the Wise and Further Words of the Wise, which particularly if if your version of the Bible doesn't pick out the section break, you can easily miss. You can even sort of drive over the border without even noticing on these two sections. So probably not Solomon, and not named, but small sections. Chapters 25 to 29 is where we want to put a bit more of our attention tonight, because this is a collection, this is a conscious gathering together of proverbs, and that's what we're trying to do in our lives. We're trying to pull together a selection of proverbs. So if you come to 25 verse 1, it says, "These also are proverbs of Solomon, which the men of Hezekiah, king of Judah, copied." So in origin, Solomon, but collected by the men of Hezekiah, presumably for Hezekiah. Now, we don't know. Was this people like Isaiah and Shebna and those people of that time, did they prepare this for the young king Hezekiah as saying, "You're about to be coronated and here's our collection of proverbs just for you"? Or did Hezekiah say, "Look, I've been reading through all these proverbs, we need to pull something together out of all of them"? Or was there some other way in which this collection was put together? We don't know. One of the challenges when you're trying to put together your own personal collection of proverbs is thinking about, well, which ones do I select? Because you could have said to Hezekiah, "Well, look, the whole book of Proverbs is there. Why do a best of? Why do a selection? Why not just use them all?" But actually, it is easier if you can sort of try and condense it down in your head. Because while many of us know some proverbs, there's very few of us that can reel off every proverb. And so, you know, if you're going to build your own collection, how do you start? Do you start with character flaws that you know you have and try and say, "Well, let's do some things that target weaknesses I know I have"? Or do we say, "Well, here's my role to play. Here are proverbs that address that role. Well, here is my place in life. Here is the collection of proverbs for the recently retired. What's important there? Or for newlyweds, here's the proverbs for young family life." There's lots of ways that we could put together a collection of proverbs, I'm sure. The proverbs for chicken owners would be useful. So we've got to say, well, okay, what's the basis of this collection? Right? Because 25 verse 1 says that these are proverbs that were copied out. So it wasn't a new set of proverbs. It wasn't, here's our 720 BC collection. Right? Here are ones that are already existing, we're selecting. It's not, because in Kings it says Solomon wrote 3,000 proverbs. There aren't 3,000 proverbs in the book of Proverbs. Proverbs, the main section of Solomon's Proverbs from 10 to 22, is one of the sources for this section. So there are some, like the classic one of it's better to dwell in the corner of a housetop. You know the one? Yeah. So that comes directly out of an earlier thing. And there are... I got this book at the Heritage College Fair. It was this thick. It was the pulpit commentary on Proverbs, Ecclesiastes and Song of Solomon. And it had, as the previous owner, Alec Crawford, who if you've read your books, you know, as the author of the CSSS set of notes on Proverbs. And I was thinking, oh, this is good. We can now compare and contrast sources and thoughts. Which ones did he agree with from the book and which ones did he not? And it says at the beginning of this section in Proverbs 25 to 29 that there are 9 direct quotes from the earlier section of Solomon's. It doesn't list them out. You've then got to read through the next 40 pages of text and then say, oh, this one is from here. There's got to be better ways to write. So the earlier Proverbs of Solomon are a source, but most are not from the earlier chapters. And we think about what other sources they might have had of Proverbs from Solomon that we don't now have. Some of them are exact copies, and others you can say, oh, these are close cousins, but not the same. And it's interesting that when they're copied out, they're not copied out in the same order in which they appear in the earlier collection from Solomon. So they're being arranged is the take-home point from all of this. All right, so we're going to expect to find some structure in this section of Proverbs that have been carefully selected out for King Hezekiah. And if you were to glance your way through Hezekiah's collection, you'd feel as though you were on the right track, because there are some sections in these chapters which really do have a feeling of connectivity. And we had one of those in chapter 25, verses either 11 to 14 or 11 to 15 is actually fine in terms of our reading. They're all about speech, aren't they? All right. Verse 11, a word fitly spoken. Verse 12, a wise reprover. 13, a faithful messenger. 14, a man boasting. 15, a soft tongue. Right, and so you say, well, yeah, okay. I've got a feeling there's a bit of collating going on here. It's just interesting by a side. So in the Hebrew, the pulpit commentary informs me, it doesn't have the word like. So it just has these two ideas just next to each other. So a word fitly spoken, apples of gold. Cold of harvest, a faithful messenger. Like makes sense in English to draw the connection. But what was interesting was that the bits about speech, the word fitly spoken, the wise reprover, the faithful messenger, and the boaster all come out of the earlier section of Proverbs, but the imagery that's used to liken them is all different to the earlier verses. So have they taken older Proverbs but given picturing that works better for Hezekiah in his day than perhaps it did in Solomon's time? We don't know, but we just got that feeling as though work has been done on these. In chapter 26, probably chapter 26 is the easiest one to discern the structure in, but chapter 26, verses 1 to 12, just about every verse has got, this is a fool. This is how to deal with fools. Verses 13 to 16, it's all about the sluggard. And verses 17 to 28, maybe there's different shapes of this within the text, but it's all about the troublemaker, the stirrer of strife. And so you say, yeah, I think there's some structure here in these chapters. They're not just random proverbs put together. So we think more about the purpose of this collection. And I think those first few verses in Proverbs 25 give us a really good start. It's Proverbs by a king, collected for another king, and involves many Proverbs about kingship. All right, so is this the proverbial manual for Hezekiah's reign? Here's how to be a good king. Why is Proverbs, or why is wisdom, particularly relevant for a king? Yep, so the effects of the king, and there's hundreds of proverbs on this one, isn't there, that if a king's like this, then this is what happens to the people. Yeah.
He also represents God.
Yeah.
He's the authority. In
good.
The God.
Yep.
He's got to be seen doing what's right.
Yes. Right. Yep, so he's an example.
In the long term, we need to be practicing to be king first.
Yep, good. Yes, he's called on to make the call, isn't he? That gradually the issue filters its way up and the king has to make a decision. And there's one other way in which wisdom is really important for a king is that sort of back in those days, king is above law. So king can go whichever way he wants. He's not bound. He's not like the labourer in the fields who's told what to do. And so, if anything, Proverbs are really useful for kings because they have the freedom to choose. So in what ways can we learn from Proverbs for kings? In what ways are we kings? Can anyone think of a proverb that talks about us as kings?
Yep.
Yes, yeah, as a student we're following the thing of kings. Kings and priests of the age to come. All right. The proverb I'm thinking of, he who rules his own house is Titus. Yep. I think in Hebrews it talks about people that rule in the ecclesia. Right. Not as dictators, hopefully, but leaders. But the man who does not rule his own spirit, right? There's a proverb about that. So we can put ourselves in the shoes of a king even though we don't wear a crown, because whether it's talking about in our own personal lives or in our families or in our workplaces, in our roles, sometimes we do have to make decisions like kings do. So while this is a collection for kings, it has a great deal of usefulness for us in terms of the direction and guidance that we give to those around us. Now, so what particular areas of wisdom are particularly relevant to kings? If you're going to write the manual for kingship and you're going to make some chapter headings, what sorts of things do you really want your king to be on top of?
The choice of advisors.
Yep, selecting the administration. Yeah.
Be aware of his own weaknesses.
Yep. Good.
Discerning right from wrong.
Yeah, to make good judgments.
To train up his son.
Yep.
Be aware of his constituents.
Good. This is not my breakup. This is something that I found in my margin. But I think we got nearly all of them in our collection there. So this came initially from a series. I don't know where he got it from, but does anyone know about ChristadelphianVault.net? Yeah, good. A big collection of talks all over the place, and you can easily download them. So if you look under Roger Lewis and you look under Proverbs, there's a set of 8 talks on Proverbs 25 to 29. Where he works his way systematically through these chapters, but these are the main chapter headings. And you can just see the range, if he's got his breakups right, the range of things that kings have to, or it's good for kings to get right. How to discern, how to handle issues, how to assess character as it presents before him, how to manage relationships, how to show personal integrity, how to govern wisely. So you can easily go to the thing to get a lot more detail on that. Just to show you there's structure to these chapters in Proverbs. And so if you're going to do, these are the Proverbs of Solomon copied out by the men of me, insert your own name here, you can take some pointers from Hezekiah and his collection to think about what things would be useful to have in your own personal collection of Proverbs. So that's about collecting Proverbs. The other thing that I want to talk about is developing the use of Proverbs. I'm not thinking about this so much at the moment in terms of the practice of them, but seeing how Proverbs get used and developed and changed and tweaked over time, and that I think that's a good thing. I suddenly had this thought after I'd assigned the homework last week. It's like, well, should we be writing new Proverbs? Because there's already a great big collection of Proverbs in the Scriptures. Is it somehow a little bit not right to be adding to that collection? But then I thought again, and I think we write new songs all the time, and we don't see that as dishonouring to the Book of Psalms. So I think it's okay, and in fact I think it's right, that we should build also our base of Proverbs, and that in so doing it actually honours the Book of Proverbs, which is itself a collection of collections of other people. They would love to see what we did with their Proverbs and how we saw what they wrote and how we understood what they said. And so I think it's a good idea to try and make use of Proverbs, and maybe if we wrote more Proverbs in less long books, we would read each other's writings more often, and maybe we wouldn't get each other into trouble as much. So let's just have a think then about this collection of Hezekiah's and see what some people did with it, because this collection gets quoted in the New Testament. So if you look at Proverbs chapter 20... Proverbs 25 verse 11? No, 22. Got that one wrong. 21 and 22. Proverbs 25, 21 and 22. If your enemy is hungry, give him bread to eat. If he is thirsty, give him water to drink, for you will heap burning coals on his head, and the Lord will reward you. I presume they're sort of metaphoric coals to be able to get the reward of God for doing so. It takes a bit of working through the meaning of that proverb, but the basic point is quite easy to understand. And if you come through to Romans chapter 12, so keep a finger in Proverbs, and come to Romans chapter 12, we can see that the Apostle Paul has been to this chapter and has thought about this proverb. And it's part of a whole section in Romans chapter 12 from verses 14 to 21. If you cast your eye through the section, you'll see that there's quite a lot of similar idea through there. It's to do with relationships, and it's often to do with relationships that are strained. And in verse 20 is the direct quote of Proverbs 25 verse 11. But when Paul is quoting this one, which is a good one, he's teamed it up with a whole heap of other wordage out of Proverbs. Verse 16, don't be wise in your own eyes, is a very Proverbs statement. It's quoted from Proverbs 3, verse 7, but it's also in chapter 26 and 28. It's a very common phrase. When he says, avenge not, verse 17 through 19, but leave it to God, well, that's probably Proverbs 20 and verse 22. When he says, live peaceably at all, verse 18, it's probably from drawn out of Proverbs 16, verse 7. And so it's a whole conflation of Proverbs together. So Paul's been through those chapters and he's pulled out a little collection. And what would you call that collection? The collection of Proverbs about strained relationships, or the Proverbs about revenge. And we've been given that little collection there in Romans chapter 12. What I think is interesting with that is that I don't think that verse 21 is a proverb from the book of Proverbs. And if I was going to be daring, I'd say that verse 21 is Paul's new proverb to discuss this thing. Maybe he agonized over the wording of this one, but isn't there a really good balance? This is not, as far as I can tell, a quote of a proverb, but verse 21, do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Yeah, crisp, it's got rhythm, it's got balance. It's a proverb, but it's probably a proverb of Paul. So, here we are. So Paul's been nutting his way through these chapters. So also has Peter. You like Peter's one. 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 22. And it comes out from Proverbs 26 and verse 11. So in verse 21 he says, it's a long context, but people that have known, have the knowledge of our Lord and Saviour Jesus Christ, and they're entangled again, they're worse off than they had. Would have been better off for them never to have known the way of righteousness than after knowing it to turn back. What the true proverb says verse 22, the dog returns to his own vomit, and the sow, after washing herself, returns to wallowing in the mire. It's one of the chickeny type proverbs, isn't it? The dog gets to enjoy a meal, gets to not enjoy a meal, and then goes back to it again. It's quite a vivid picture. I haven't spent a lot of time around dogs. I don't know whether that's a common doggish thing to do or not. Yeah, I think too many nodding heads to suggest that they don't. So has Peter just done the proverb, or has he done something to the proverb, is the question? Because we're looking about how people make use of proverbs. So Proverbs 26, verse 11. What's the difference? Yeah, so he's got a second one on there, isn't it? So it's like a dog returning to its own vomit, and like a sow who's washed herself returning to wallow in the mire. Where's that from? Is it a new proverb from Peter? Right? I'm not satisfied with just talking about these people like a dog eating their own vomit. I'm going to give you a double whammy. So he does the pig in the mud. Mm.
So, how I'm thinking out loud, Peter has the Holy Spirit.
Yep.
He knows that there's all sorts of proverbs that have been put about. Not
yep.
All of them are now in the Bible.
Yes. Yep.
Does he have access to this other material?
Mm. Yeah. Ah, well, maybe. Yes, he has more to do with swine. Yeah. Yeah, there we go. So all I'm saying is I think the Bible gives us license to enjoy Proverbs as they stand, but also allows us to be creative in finding ways to express things for our own time and place. Jesus also worked his way through these proverbs. And I think it's one of those things in the Old Testament, it's really good when you can feel as though verses that you're puzzling over are ones that others have read before you. You know, people go to historic places and they say, so-and-so walked through that archway. Or someone, you know, people go to Middle East and Paul stood in this spot, or he walked on this road, and there's a thing, and you can get the same in Scripture, isn't it? When you see that someone's been there, he's obviously worked his way through this place. I'm treading on ground that's already been stepped on. And we get that when we recognise New Testament authors quoting things out of the Old Testament. So Jesus used Proverbs 2. We mostly call them parables because he often extends them out into a story. But I'd just like you to think that he didn't teach anything that he hadn't learnt first. That is, he had to ponder the Proverbs in order to be able to come up with the teachings. And I think he's one of the best demonstrators of the fact that Proverbs like to be used in new and useful ways. So sometimes Jesus will quote a proverb directly. Sometimes he'll pull a number of proverbs in, and when you say, which proverb does this parable come from? And you say, well, there's actually about 8 or 9 proverbs that it could have come from. Which one is it? Well, it's probably not one. It's a mind thinking over a number of parables and pulling them together. And sometimes using them in ways that you might think the original proverb would be surprised at. And we're almost out of time. But there is, throughout this collection of Hezekiah, quite a number of very direct references by Jesus to these proverbs. And just in the section that we read together at the start, so 25 verses 6 and 7 is very much the parable of at the wedding place when you're invited to a feast, very much drawn very strongly just from that proverb extended out into a story in Luke 14. Then we come down to verse 8 about being cautious about going through to court but agreeing with your neighbour early, I think is drawn in Matthew chapter 5, verse 25. Verse 9, argue your case with your neighbour himself, probably finds its output in Matthew 18. And the discussion about disputes there, and so on. So you can think, well, when I'm reading these proverbs, these are well trampled by the Lord. And as we try to nut them out and figure out how they work, recognise that he put in that same effort. And when you see a connection, probably he did too. And it's almost like you can travel to Jerusalem, but just in your own living room, as it were, of being able to be in the same place that the Lord has been. Couple of thoughts as we finish. What's the best way to study the book of Proverbs? Probably with a couple of good other versions next to your Bible. You can nut your way through Hebrew words, but you're probably not going to come up with great insights that the translators of a few different versions haven't thought of or mulled over. One of the difficulties is that Proverbs are going to be making use of the richness of their language, because it's dense writing, and if you don't pick up on the nuance, then you'll miss the point. So probably grab a few versions and compare between all of those to try and get the sense. Proverbs almost gets given an entry ticket into the New Testament, doesn't it? So the little Gideon's Bible is New Testament, Psalms and Proverbs. Yeah? And I think probably there's a reason behind that, in that Proverbs slides very easily across to the Christian era. You know, when we read the book of Leviticus or things, we're always trying to think, well, what's still relevant? What do we have to understand just as a principle but now has changed in Christ? There's actually very little material in Proverbs that we have to adjust for, and so I think we very easily slide into just adopting Proverbs as is without having to think, oh, but this is under the law. How have things changed? Well, no, maybe the principles of wisdom are actually pretty timeless. There will always be some things that we need to read up on to get the point. So when the sluggard says there's a lion in the streets, most of us don't have an experience of living in places where lions roam streets. Sure, someone has here, but don't know. But while that's not part of our experience, we can picture that one quite easily. It's not a problem. But if you were to look at, false balances and uneven weights, false weights and uneven balances. Unless you've sort of worked out the way that they used to trade back then, it probably doesn't pull up the right imagery. You can sort of guess it from the words, but it's made more rich. So sometimes the pictures that we have in Proverbs, we do need to do a little bit of digging to get the connection. Almost there. The words of God, according to Deuteronomy chapter 6, says, "You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes." Now, I was just thinking about this in regard to having Proverbs, you know, making use of Proverbs a bit more. And I was thinking, but the trouble with 21st century life is if you say, what is bound in people's eyes, bound in people's hands and held up right in front of their eyes, it's all a mobile device, isn't it? You know, you see the pictures of everybody up. And that actually this becomes difficult, isn't it? Because while we want to have something bound on our hands and held in front of our eyes, there's already something there. And somehow if we're going to get some of these words to be front and centre of our vision, we've somehow got to figure out a way to do that in a very practical sense. Now, I had an idea, which I'll just see if I'm still connected to the net, then it'll work. You can choose your own home page on a browser. For anyone who doesn't use a browser, you can stop listening for the next few minutes. Right? You don't have to take the default. Right? Now, here is a very simple little thing that I've set up, that if I was to make this page my home page, then every time I open my browser, instead of being confronted with everything, I get that. And I've set it up with a few of them. And each time I re-enter my browser, it will take a random selection from my list. So that if I've got 10 or 12 proverbs that I want to remember, then every time I open a new tab on my browser, then I just get that little thing. And then I can click there and go back to whatever normal home page I have. Now, so anyone that's interested, I can easily copy that across and show you how to do it for yourself. Now, if you're a really non-tech person and you have your Microsoft computer and you don't change what the home page will be, then it will send you to what used to be 9.com. And I just want to show you, this is what your home page otherwise looks like. See, Nissan's got a bit of an ad campaign on at the moment. There's almost no content left of the news. Right. Now, so the question is, that can be what happens every time we open our browser. We're straight away into everything that's going on and everything that everybody wants to. Have you seen that Nissan has got a sale on? It's like, I've never seen something take over a web page as much as that this morning. Just thought you'd be interested. Or you can do it that way, right? Where you've decided, this is what my home page will be. This could be anything. You can change whatever text you want in it. But I don't have to go straight into the great shopping mall of the rest of the world. I can take that little moment to just put something else in front of my eyes and in my hand. So anyone that's interested, we can easily help with that. Yeah, I was going to say, and people used to cross-stitch proverbs. Yeah. Nobody hangs stuff on toilet doors these days, huh? Oh, they do. So I hope these two evenings have sort of helped to inspire you to take another look at Proverbs and try and just make them real and active is all I've been trying to do. There is one proverb finally. It's a statement which we can call a proverb, I think. In the Gospel of Luke, it's at the end of a little phrase by Jesus. And he concludes it by saying, "But wisdom is justified of her children." I think he's drawing this from Proverbs chapters 1 to 9, where there's wisdom and there's folly. They're both crying out in the marketplace of life for people to follow them. And you read those early chapters, and sometimes the call sounds very similar. Sometimes it's very different. You've got to decide, says the writer in chapters 1 to 9, who you're going to choose. You're going to go wisdom, or you're going to go folly. And in the time of Jesus, there is then the conflict between Jesus and his followers and the children of this generation. And here are in verse 31 of Luke 7. "To what then shall I compare the children of this generation? What are they like? They are children sitting in the marketplace and calling to one another." Right? Now these are folly's children. Right? And they're really, they say, "We played the flute and you didn't dance. We sang a dirge and you didn't weep." You're not doing what We want you to. Because John the Baptist, he did what he thought was right, and he went out into the wilderness, and he had shaggy clothes, and he had a rough diet, and he called people out to him in a loud sort of voice. He didn't like that. It wasn't to their taste. Jesus comes along, and he does what's right. And he reaches out to people that they despised. And he wasn't such a rough man, and he was a bit of a quieter person. He was not in the wilderness, he was in the city. And he reached out to people by touching them rather than standing back and calling them out. He was very different in nature to John the Baptist. I didn't like him either. Oh no, you're too close to people that we don't like. But wisdom is justified of her children. John the Baptist and Jesus, both are wisdom's children. They're both listening to the voice of wisdom. And when we listen to the voice of wisdom, we don't all end up as carbon copies of each other. How wisdom will be applied in your life, in your circumstances, with your abilities and your character, will be different to somebody else's. Don't have to make all of each other the same as each other. But if we follow wisdom's voice, then wisdom says we'll be justified of all her children. And hopefully that includes us.